Chula Vista, California, as our case study. Okay. Our first speaker is Steve Castaneda. He's a council person in Chula Vista. He's going to set the stage by explaining the types of healthy environmental change work that's actually going on right now in Chula Vista, and he's going to tell us all why he and others on the city council were interested in pursuing this. And they've been a healthy eating active community site for how many years now? 5 years. Okay, so they're one of the pioneers in the state of California. And they've actually done a lot to start to build a healthier environment in Chula Vista, which is San Diego County, for those of you who don't remember your California geography or who didn't grow up in California. We're then going to follow on with Dana Richardson. Dana is active in Chula Vista, and he is going to tell about his organization and what they've done, how they've worked with local elected officials, how they've worked with technical assistance providers like my organization and others, funders like the California Endowment, which has done a lot through their Healthy Eating Active Communities program to help foster some of this work at the local level and to bring technical assistance knowledge down to the local level to help make environmental change, healthy environmental change. From Dana, then to one of my colleagues, Heather Wooten, who's also at Public Health Law and Policy, and she has been at Public Health Law and Policy longer than I have and has been working closely with Chula Vista and others around the state to really give people the kind of technical assistance that they need in order to get their work done. So she's going to talk about that and the type of technical assistance that's available to communities like yours, because, you know, not everyone might have their finger on the latest planning policy language or for food or whatever, you know, some of the other people around the state are doing. And as technical assistance providers, we can help bring you some of the lessons and help distill some of the best practices so that you can learn from what Chula Vista and others have done for the last 5 years and get a real jump start on your work. And then Manal Abalada is going to finish up. She's going to be the last speaker, and she's going to talk broadly about the types of resources that are available through the California Convergence and through some of the other initiatives that are going on around the state right now where people are working to build healthy communities. We all know that everyone is financially strapped and that in a lot of people's minds that really poses a challenge when you're talking about changing the ways you're doing business. But we're going to talk to you about some of the resources that are available for you to help you do the work. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give everyone about 10 minutes. That's 40. We've got till 2:30, so then we're going to engage in conversation. Everyone was supposed to give me questions to ask them, but most of them didn't, so I'm just going to come up with my own questions to get them going. And then I see two microphones, and I haven't tested them, but I assume they work. And so we'll open the field to questions as well, because you've been sitting here for a long time, and I'd like you to be able to get up and be active, okay? So we're going to start off with Council Member Castaneda. So one thing I'd like him to explain to us is how the Chula Vista Little League team managed to win the Little League World Series.
Thank you. Yeah. You know what I have to say? I'm not sure how they did it. I'm just glad they did. And, you know, I went to the head of our Chamber of Commerce, and obviously for everyone that's involved in government, we know what's happening with budgets. And I think many of you in the past, and maybe you still do, have given money, you know, to the Chambers of Commerce, and if you have a Convention and Visitors Bureau, to go out and to promote the city, to basically raise the awareness not only in the region but the state and the country about what your city's doing and all the great things if you have a little bit of a desire to be in the tourism business, which we do obviously in Chula Vista since we're close to the water. And I went to the head of the Chamber of Commerce and I said, you know, the way that I look at it is the last 10 years we've given you about $5 million. And these 12 young men in 1 week did more to promote the city of Chula Vista with basically, you know, just their parents and, you know, the neighborhoods supporting their team. And, you know, we've got so much exposure. And, you know, the kids, I don't know that it's been set, but they've been invited to the White House. And they've become the celebrities. They are clearly the cream of the crop in Chula Vista, and we're very proud. We're very happy that they've gotten so much support from around the country. But let's talk a little bit about specifically about Chula Vista, because many of you may not know a lot about Chula Vista. You know, we are in the county of San Diego. We're the county of San Diego, second largest city. You know, big brother is San Diego. And we rest just south of the city of San Diego and about 8 miles north of the Mexican-U.S. border. And obviously, being that close to the U.S.-Mexican border has a lot of opportunities. It's got a lot of benefits, but it's also got a lot of challenges. We obviously are having, you know, a little bit of an issue with some of the well-publicized wars going on with the cartels and so forth, and a bit of that sometimes spills into our community. And, you know, our police department and our other law enforcement agencies struggle with that. But all in all, the communities of Chula Vista are very strong. We really don't have the challenges that a lot of inner city communities do, and that's translated to some things that are actually quite good for healthy eating and active communities. And it's very, I think, very good for me to come to speak to a group, and I speak to a few groups here and there around the state about this particular issue, of all city elected and appointed personnel, because a lot of times when I go and I talk to folks in counties or school districts or so forth, they're doing a lot of things and they have a lot of background and a lot of understanding about health issues and about the need to be active in our communities, the challenges that are low income and our minority communities are having with the ability to make healthy choices. And we traditionally as cities have never been in that realm. But the good thing is that's changing. And it's changing because of good folks at HEAC, the California Endowment, and folks that really care about low-income and minority communities have sat down and said, we need to do something. And we can't just do it through the traditional modes of communication or governance, such as the counties, the states, and the school district. We really need cities to be involved. I just started my second term as a city council member in December. And since I have been on the city council, you know, Dana, who you're going to hear from in a couple of minutes, basically came with Tanya, who maybe some of you know that she's been very active in HEAC and Chula Vista, but also statewide, came and visited me and talked about wanting to get the city of Chula Vista involved in the healthy eating and active communities movement. And I sort of thought about it because I have a bit of a history in local government, particularly municipal government. I worked for the city of San Diego for a number of years. And I said, well, you know, isn't that sort of the county's job? And isn't that sort of the state's job and school districts and all that? And they said, no, that whole paradigm is shifting. And we know that we have limited success when we go through the traditional methods. And so we really need Chula Vista to be our partner. So it didn't take a lot of convincing for me to understand that our communities, the Latino communities of Chula Vista, were directly impacted by the problems of obesity and diabetes and just a lack of opportunities to understand what healthy eating and being active really was and what the benefits were. And I know that, you know, Robert presented, I was at a bit of the symposium. He talked a lot about, you know, what local city governments can do. And so I started really looking at some of the things that we have that directly affect neighborhoods and how we can improve the quality of life by giving people better choices in terms of what they put in their mouth. And I started thinking about it, and the city has a lot of abilities. We have a significant amount of ability to steer public policy, to basically make land use changes, to insist that retailers and people that provide, you know, our communities with food make sane and make responsible decisions in terms of who they and what they sell. And so we started talking about some of the things that the city could do right off. And so they talked about, well, you know, you've got all these recreation centers and, you know, you go there and the vending machines have, you know, salted peanuts and they've got candies and they've got all this stuff. And these kids, it's really sort of a inconsistency because you're asking them to be active in the recreation center and then when they come out, all they have is choices of bad food. So I said, okay, well, let's look at that. And so I brought our purchasing person in and I said, you know, let's make some decisions on changing the vending products. And he said, no, we've got contracts and we can't make any changes on that. And, you know, we'll be sued and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't believe that. So I talked to a few of my colleagues and, you know, we brought it to the city council. We told the city manager, this is where we're going. You guys, you and the city attorney, figure it out because this is where we're going. It was a 4-1 vote. We have 5 members on the city council. And one fella basically argued the fact that it was some sort of constitutional right to be able to buy a Snickers bar in a Chula Vista recreation center. You know, rather than engage in that sort of discourse, we just decided to live with the 4-1. Basically today, you know, the vending policy in Chula Vista is something that has been copied and emulated in cities all over California. And so that was just a very small step. What we really wanted to do was move forward on more public policy matters. And we looked at, and we did, we banned smoking in outdoor eating areas. We banned smoking, you know, 50 feet around the openings of buildings. We had a lactation policy for our city buildings that set aside room for mothers that wanted to breastfeed. And so we started to do a lot of those things. And those were things that really cities didn't previously do. Then I started to think about, okay, well, how do we go out not only in city facilities and these things and how I'm going to the community and basically do things to insist that, you know, that people and neighborhoods have access. So we started looking at the western part of Chula Vista, which is predominantly Latino, and we hadn't built any parks there. So we started looking at and getting federal funds and using city money and started dedicating and prioritizing these neighborhoods. So we built a couple of new parks and we got a couple more that are coming on. And we started to get the police sort of interested in what's happening with making sure that our streets are a little bit safer, that we have a little bit more visibility and more presence in areas around parks because mothers and kids were a little concerned about some of the elements in hanging some of these parks. So we really tried to make the neighborhood a little bit more user-friendly. The next thing that we're doing, and we are actually doing a specific plan for our whole southwest part, which is probably about 85% Latino, southwest part of the community, and it will actually be one of the first planning documents that will have a health benefit index, in that we will ensure that we have the kinds of facilities and the kinds of amenities that basically promote healthy living and active communities, and basically, you know, put an end to drive-through fast foods. Use our redevelopment dollars, and I know that you talked about redevelopment. Basically, use our redevelopment dollars to say to people that want to use city funds, taxpayer funds, to build buildings that you will not lease or sell to folks that are basically going to sell unhealthy foods. We can do those things. And those things have never been thought of. Usually, all of us are city officials of one sort or another. We usually think about building heights and FARs and parking spaces and, you know, driveways and ADTs and all those things. But we never think about, you know, what we're actually doing in the store and what's that doing to the community as a whole. So that's a whole new way of looking. And we're basically working with HEAC. And again, Dana's going to talk a lot about what those activities are, but HEAC really has been the lightning rod behind what Chula Vista is doing. I frankly would have never thought about doing half of this stuff, but they get you in there and they start to make you understand how you can make change that really does affect people. I want to talk a little bit about something also because our city is a fairly safe community. And I know that a lot of inner city communities, and Robert talked about that, where you have an emerging community where big time retail grocers don't want to come in because they don't want to make that investment. They're worried about their assets and they're worried about their employees. Well, we don't really have that problem in Chula Vista. In southwestern Chula Vista, we had three major grocery stores. We had Albertsons, Ralph's, and Vaughn's. The problem is that those grocery stores have not been able to compete because the Latino neighborhoods want their products. And so what's happening is that the little neighborhood grocery stores are starting to see more business, and they're starting to see, a need and a demand for fresh fruits and vegetables. And so what's happened is the Vaughn's and the Albertsons and the Ralph's have moved out. We're starting to see these mid-sized retailers. Many of them are headquartered in Los Angeles, and I don't think there's a copyright issue here, but Gonzalez Marketplace is one. They owns about 35 stores. I met the president the other day because he had sponsored a big event for our World Series champions. And I got to talking about him and said, saying, hey, listen, I go to your store all the time. And I love the fruits and vegetables. I love the fresh meats and the poultry and the fish. I said, but the problem is that there are other products that I think that people who are health-minded want to buy. Using non-fat, flavorless yogurt instead of sour cream. A lot of different, having more like a granolas and all those kinds of things like that. And he said, we've been struggling with that issue because we don't know whether or not the Latino communities will buy those. And I think Dana's going to share a little bit of information about what's going on in his community because he lives in National City just to the north of us. But quite frankly, with HEAC, educating our neighborhoods about what healthy eating and healthy purchasing choices are, about basically the kids getting it from the schools, we are building the market for those kinds of food. And so my message to him was, you offer it and they will buy it. And the fact is he's agreed to start to set aside portions of his refrigerator counters to these kinds of foods. And so that's going to be tremendous because when we think about about healthy eating or choices, we think about fresh fruits and meats. But you know what? Since we live so close to Mexico, some of the products that come from Mexico, my son bought some bag of Takis or something from Mexico, and I looked at the nutritional information, and I would rather him eat a bag of Lay's Fritos or something because this stuff has so much sodium and so much fat and all of these things, and really we have to sort of worry about that too. So, when I think about city government, I think about land use planning, but I think about the way that we can steer our community and we can build communities, particularly those that have been neglected in the past and ones we don't think about. And working with organizations like HEAC, the California Endowment, and other groups that are working to educate Latino and minority communities about what to eat and how to make those kinds of foods that are better for them, I think we are starting to make some headway in this regard. So I appreciate you listening to me. Thank you very much.
And you'll get the opportunity to hear from the councilman later on and to direct some questions in toward him. Dana, over to you, okay? In 10 minutes, please.
Can you say I just worked myself out of a job? I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to hear the council members so eloquently speak about sustainable leadership on this issue of food and physical activity environments. Thank you so much. I'm Dana Richardson. I represent an organization called Community Health Improvement Partners, which is the community benefit arm of the Healthcare Association of San Diego and Imperial Counties in San Diego. We have been working on built environment and public health issues since actually the late 90s, which you just heard is really like 15 years in the making. And I hope you indulge me in kind of this stream of consciousness in what I have to share with you, because the council member basically took everything out of my mind that I was going to say with you today. But the fact is that I just want to share with you another perspective, because getting to that place where sustainable leader in the community speaks so eloquently about these issues and how he's actually attacked this obesity epidemic is what it's all about. And I guess I have one question. How many of us have bona fide partnerships with non-governmental organizations and resident groups in our cities? This is good, and it has to continue to grow, because you know that the cities, the school districts, they can't do it all alone. And we need to fortify our relationship, and non-governmental organizations like mine, they need to be relentless. I mean, this has been a 10, 15 year boxing match. Literally, I had to set so many meetings to get the council member Castaneda, his aide, the mayor. So many times there was an overhaul of high-level staff, elected officials, and I have to go back, re-educate, throw ideas out there, a la carte, packaged, however you want to see it. But this is just kind of like the story from a non-governmental, resident-led perspective. I'll tell you how this happened. Back in March 2005, I was at my first conference with the endowment in Santa Monica. And toward the end, California Endowment put out a press release stating that they put $26 million into obesity prevention in one of six communities, and that was one of the six communities was Chula Vista. So I actually got a call from local San Diego Tribune, and she interviewed me, and I said all the right things, basically. But one thing I said was that parks could be unsafe. Do you know that put me a couple steps back in my relationship development with the city of Chula Vista? Well, even though I had a good feature story, I still was walking upward, and because I took a couple steps back with the way that I had stated myself. But what I stated was really real. And so beyond that, however, I took an opportunity to engage with another media outlet. Let's see, the KUSI Morning Show, and I had a live 15-minute interview with the producer there, and had all my talking points and everything. I talked about the same things about built environment and public health. I talked about statistics. And then my education process began from the perspective of a local city. I left that interview and I got several calls, and one was from one of the partner organizations called the Environmental Health Coalition. Never thought that I would ever bond in a childhood obesity prevention effort with environmental activists. But the fact is that this lady, Linda, I can't remember her last name right now, but she educated me on the timeliness of the issue back in March 2005. You see, they were going through a general plan update, and this lady called me and she said, you know what, if you don't know the steps, I'll take you through them. And she actually had me meet with my talking points about built environment, public health, and strategies with all the council members and the mayor. And she also encouraged me to advocate through letters and get it to the principal planner who was overseeing the general plan update process. So I did a quick read of Public Health Law and Policy, Prevention Institute, California Center for Public Health Advocacy, and put together a pretty decent letter after some folks read through it. And I got to the guy that was a principal planner. His name is Ed Badshelter. Ed Badshelter ended up calling me. He said, I like what you have here. This looks good. I'm going to use the development of parks, pedestrian safety, lighting, sidewalks, access to farmers market, this fast food thing that you put in here, I'm not going to do. And that really just started the relationship. And what I say is that at times during this quest to really bond with them and build trust, I actually spoke on different topics that I didn't even get paid for to do. See, and that's what non-governmental organizations and local residents need to do. They have to be willing to set their agenda aside and then come and talk about tall buildings. Remember that discussion? You know, people were in the meeting about building heights, and they were missing the point of just how substantial the general plan update was, but people were willing to just be in a meeting till midnight to argue about the height of buildings, but they were missing the general point. So after that, we were able to gain quite a bit of notoriety, and our partnership is unique. from the perspective of the California Endowment, or rather my assessment, and the Public Health Institute and Kaiser, you know, they basically are looking for sustainable leadership, like what Steve has exemplified. They put our community-based organization in the room for 5 years with city employees, two school districts, and the public health department. And that was just to inspire what you see so eloquently demonstrated right here. And so with popularity came opportunity. And the timing was right. They were going through an update. They wanted to revitalize their downtown. They wanted to revitalize and upgrade the southwest area of Chula Vista and also their bayfront. And simultaneously, you see Councilmember Castaneda was also a NALEO fellow, National Association of Latino Elected Officials. And one of his projects was around childhood obesity, but through improving food and physical activity environments. So we were able to talk quite regularly about what it is that we could do, strategies to implement, how could we move the needle on these things. And we've accomplished a lot. I'll go ahead and tell you some of it. The planning and transportation element, 7.16, talks about the farmers markets, sidewalks, the development of parks and open space. They have a 100% healthy vending policy citywide. There's a breastfeeding accommodations policy. They had the grand opening of a park, the first one on the west side of Chula Vista in 25 years. They revitalized, or rather enhanced conditions at three other parks. They improved school communities, sidewalks, walkability. But that's just scratching the surface. The leadership, as soon as the infrastructure was infiltrated, or rather infected, they went on and took it a step further. Do you know that they deemed four parks in Western Chula Vista as alcohol-free? They also talked about banning smoking in parks. And then they leveraged their relationship with HEAC, or rather the experience of the initiative to do city business. They got a $1.1 million Safe Routes to School grants. Those are two grants. Community-based transportation planning grant for $241,000, and also a $400,000 City of Chula Vista Brownfields grant. I say all of this to say that we've accomplished a lot, but we just scratched the surface. And what I'd like to talk to you more about during the session is, what about that neighborhood connection, that neighborhood apathy that exists? We know that cities can't do it all. We know school districts can't do it all. But when is the community going to get involved in proactively making change? I have a lot of ideas to share about that. I invite your conversation.
Thank you very much, Dana. Heather is going to speak next, specifically about the types of technical assistance that some of the technical assistance providers around the state can provide to both the city and to the community-based organization in the city to help them move some of this work forward.
Well, thank you, Robert. And I just have to say it's a real pleasure to share the table today with such amazing community leadership out of Chula Vista. For those of you who were in the session immediately preceding this, Robert probably talked a little bit about our shop, but I'll just do a quick recap so that people know what we mean when we talk about technical assistance. So Robert and I both work for an organization called Public Health Law and Policy, and we're a team of mostly lawyers, a sprinkling of city planners. I am one of the city planning minority in the office, and a few public policy experts. And our job is to work with communities around California, around the country, to help them understand how legal and policy tools can be used to support healthy communities. So we're kind of like the planning expert, legal expert backup that communities can call when they have an idea, they don't necessarily know what the tools would be to execute that idea, or they want to just become fluent in understanding the tools so that they can be competent advocates when they go to their city council, when they go to their decision makers in their community. So I really appreciated what Dana was talking about when he said, you know, this is all about the road that gets us to these success stories, because technical assistance, I think, is a really critical part of that road. And what I see my role is in communities is being able to listen to how they describe their interests and needs and provide them with resources that let them do their job better. So whether that job is having a meeting with their head of the city planning department and convincing that person to include policy language in a general plan, whether it's meeting with their council member and talking about restructuring contracting around vending, that is something that we're trying to help them do more effectively. And one of the things that I think we try and get out there and let people know about is that if you're thinking about undertaking a policy process to support healthy communities, what time do you pick up the phone and call your technical assistance expert, your outsider, and ask them for help with your project? And the short answer to that is really at any time in the process. You should be thinking about how you could maybe reach out to resources that are available on these topics of healthy eating and active living. So we've worked with communities at all stages of the process. In the very early stages, it might be a phone call with somebody about something like, hey, we're interested in getting involved in our general plan. What's the process of doing that? And I think it was so funny that Dana talked about this story. So I started working at Public Health Law and Policy in 2006. The story he described where he was going and making all those meetings and sending all those letters was 2005. By the time I started working, I called up Dana. I was like, hey, how did you do that in Chula Vista, Dana? And he was the expert. He knew, the most effective strategy for doing this. So it's, by the way, a really iterative process. We learn as much from the communities as we, try and pass on in terms of, technical skills or technical knowledge. So if it's really early in the process, one of the things that we might do is do a policy scan from, around the state or around the country about what communities have adopted similar things. And an example of that recently was that one of the advocates who both these folks have mentioned earlier, Tanya, was looking for policies that support something called crime prevention through environmental design. And crime prevention through environmental design is a sort of state of planning practice that looks at how the way we design communities impacts people's own personal feelings of safety, as well as the likelihood that crime will occur in communities. And it looks at things like lighting and transparency and ability to see into certain areas, as well as just other kinds of design things to think through, are there things that we can do at a planning level to actually impact whether people feel safe in their neighborhoods and whether criminals think that this is an okay place to be, hanging out. So we did a scan of policies from around the country and provided her with some examples that she was able to then take back and say, oh, okay, so this is the range of options we might think through if we're going to go down this type of path in Chula Vista. We also have come in at the 11th hour, at the very last moment of a policy process. And actually, I've had a number of examples of working with communities on general plans that's happened, which is not ideal. Ideally, you're always in there at the ground floor if you're an advocate. But one of the things that I think technical assistance can help you with if you get in at the 11th hour is crafting your comments or your response or your advocacy or your agenda, your campaign in such a way that it's as effective as possible. So that you have a very clear ask, so that what you're asking for is within the legal and policy structure that it's trying to fit into, so that you have the best chance of basically getting something in, even though it is at the last minute, without causing a lot of, slowdowns or resentment or complications. And we've been able to do that with a number of communities around the country as well. And then there are also examples of getting in at the midway stage, and the midway stage might be you're looking to, let's say, pass a community gardening policy at the local level, and you want to have someone review that policy and see, hey, are there ways that this policy could be strengthened? Are we thinking through everything we should be thinking of? Just is there someone out there who could take a look at this and, from their perspective, provide some feedback? And that was another example of a project we just worked on in Chula Vista where they were there passing a city policy for support of community gardens. It's a great policy. I think it's an excellent example for the state of California. And we were able to review and, with our own expertise of other communities, provide some insight and maybe ask them some kind of questions that those advocates can then bring and engage their elected officials on. So, you know, the message that I would say is the earlier the better. That's always the story. If you're thinking about going through a policy process and you feel like it would be useful to have technical assistance, there's never a bad time to pick up the phone or send an email and get that resource. And then the other issue that I wanted to talk about, because I think this is a really, in two minutes, I'm going to talk about what it means to be an outside technical assistance provider and respond to the diversity of political climates in communities, which we see even in California. We're a very diverse state politically, and especially for Robert and I, as folks who operate out of the Bay Area, I think we bring a lot of unfortunate Berkeleyite baggage that comes with us, San Francisco baggage that comes with us. And it's, you know, it's a reality that we try and deal with, but also dismiss to some extent when we're actually working with communities. We work in a really diverse range of communities, and I just want to emphasize for everybody in the room, the leaders in this movement, I don't think are the usual suspects. I think the leading communities who are doing some of the best work around the state of California and even around the country on these topics are places like, you know, Louisville, Kentucky, places like Chula Vista, California, places like Delano, California, Richmond, California. You know, these are not the places that have all the resources and, you know, all the talent and all of this and all of that. They're places with really committed community organizations, with, I think, leadership that is able to see the importance of this issue to their community, and who are able to get things done. And I think that's really the most critical piece of this. And I'll say for me, as a technical assistance provider, you know, I do have an agenda. My agenda is to get the best policy for that place in passed and on the books. And that means responding to the specific political climate in which I'm working. And I think, you know, Dana's example talking about fast food is a great one. This is a topic I often bring up with advocates. You know, are you interested in restricting fast food in your community? Here are the tools you can use to do it. Now, whether those tools are politically feasible to be used is something that varies. But one of the things that we try and do is help advocates understand that if they're pitching their policy from a health or childhood obesity perspective, there may be other ways to pitch that policy to folks who don't necessarily respond to that as strongly. So when you're thinking about something like fast food, the big issue for a lot of places, and this is going to be probably true with all business issues, is, you know, the tax base. And communities are really concerned about saying no to any business these days, I'd say, in this political climate, this economic climate. And the idea that you'd be restricting any kind of business may not be politically popular. So we try and help communities think through, okay, well, what's the flip side of this? Can you focus on healthy food businesses as an economic development strategy? Think about job creation, tax base, economic development for healthy businesses, and not just say, no, we're saying no to business, and that's the strategy that we're going after. So I think that's just something important to keep in mind. So I will, pause now, since I see Robert standing, which is always a sign to move on, and pass it to Manal. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Heather. Manal Abulata is here from the Prevention Institute, and resources are critical. Resources in terms of knowledge, in terms of support, in terms of being part of a movement, in terms of learning how to get access to technical assistance. So I'm going to turn the floor over to Manal to talk about the sort of resources that are available in the state, because California really is in the forefront of making these sort of healthy built environment changes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. When Robert called me and asked me if I wanted to come speak to the league, I said I would be absolutely honored to do that. What do you want me to talk about? And he said, resources in California. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. The state was talking about IOUs. Our colleagues in the state and in around the city were going and facing furlough days. And when I think about resources, I think about money to do the things I want to do. So I told him, no way, let's think about a different topic. And he said, well, Manal, I really, the panel's been constructed, but let me negotiate with you. How about resources? And I'll put in parentheses, broadly construed, and you can talk about any kind of resources that you want to. So I decided I would do it because I do think it's an important issue, and because I do really acknowledge that we have a wealth of resources in our state that include financial resources but really do go beyond that. So I will be talking a little bit about some of those non-financial resources that I think are available to support work in healthy communities, healthy eating, active living communities, as well as some of the people and political kind of capital type of resources that I think are available. And I'll talk also about sort of what is currently on the ground in terms of resources, what I think is in the pipeline, and some things that we've heard maybe coming over the horizon, so we can talk in a little bit about, you know, three time phases. And then we'll really welcome some questions. So let me just start out with a question for you. One of the things that's been mentioned here is a Healthy Eating Active Communities Initiative, but there are a number of other types of initiatives like the California Convergence Initiative, which really represents 6 major funders in California nationally, representing 40 different sites throughout California. And California Endowment has just announced a very powerful initiative called Building Healthy Communities, where they've funded 14 communities in California, and they've conceptualized this as a 10-year initiative where communities will really build and work sustainably towards the kind of change that Dana and Councilmember Castaneda spoke of. How many people know for sure whether or not, yes or no, whether or not you have a Healthy Eating Active Communities or California Convergence or Robert Wood Johnson funded Healthy Eating Active Living by Design initiative in your city or local jurisdiction? Please, by a show of hands. So just to quote Dana, that's good, but it needs to continue. I really would like to see that every single person in this room is able to say definitively whether or not there is some local active collaborative working on eating and activity for two reasons. One, in this work, building healthy eating active communities, people in the public health field are needing to step out of their comfort zone. They're needing to understand how to talk about planning and understand why building heights might not be the central focus of the conversation. And they really require you in local government to navigate and help provide the leadership and say, this is some of the things we think we can do, this is some of the things we think we can't do, and to be able to come to you and ask, hey, we're thinking about trying to do something like healthy vending. What can you do? How can you help me? And I, just having worked with a number of communities that are funded through the endowment, through these other initiatives in the Convergence Partnership, there's a tremendous amount of knowledge and people power there, but the work of folks like you in the League can provide sustainability and depth and visibility to bring that work to the next level. And so I feel like it's very important in terms of the resources that have already hit the ground, people working in those convergence communities, HEAC communities, and so on, that they're connected to folks like you in local government. When Linda Schack, my colleague sitting over there, and I worked with NALEO, the National Association of Local Electeds, on their California Health, the National Health Leadership Program that they have, we were really struck by the fact that the local electeds that we were working with felt like they also wanted to be connected to the local collaboratives that were in their communities but didn't know how to. And so what we've really been trying to do since we understood that is try to really weave together and find connections and build connections. So we and a number of our partners are really available to local officials to figure out whether or not there's a funded community that's working on change, healthy eating, active living change in your community, and trying to bridge those connections. And there's a number of other organizations that are doing that as well. So leaving here as sort of a bit of homework, I really encourage you to look and Google your city and find out if there's a Healthy Eating Active Communities Collaborative, a HEAL Collaborative, a California Convergence Collaborative, and we at Prevention Institute, or PHLP, I'm sure would be happy to do that. And so, you know, again, in thinking about resources, our human capital, you know, those of you who are in this room really clearly represent a key piece of the resources, because it is you and your ideas and your creativity that can leverage and make some of these ideas become a reality. Because no matter how much a person like me working in my neighborhood or a person working at the community or neighborhood level says, we want a new park that's safe or we want complete streets, ultimately, we will need to work closely with you and decision makers like you to make that a reality. And one of the things, as I said, that community residents can bring is some of that people power. And I'm sure Dana will speak more to that. In terms of resources, because this work isn't completely intuitive and it's not easy, just building on Heather and Robert's conversation about sort of technical assistance and skills and training that are available, I think there are important organizations like the Institute for Local Government that are here to support your training and your skills and development. And in particular, I see there's a handout that was on your table at lunch really highlighting the League's Healthy Eating, Active Living Initiative, which brings the expertise of the California Center for Public Health Advocacy and cities, counties, and schools. And Francesca and Charlotte, I believe you're in the room, and maybe people have heard you. Stand, Francesca, that wasn't nearly visible enough. And she really, excellent, provides, I think, a lot of the technical and policy resources and understands deeply what cities, counties, and schools go through and need to think about in this kind of work. In addition to that, Naleo has been mentioned a number of times, and I think they have a health leadership institute that I think not only is about training people, but what I saw in Steve's cohort was building a peer network of people that are thinking broadly about these issues, how do they do it, and I'm quite sure that other council members and school board members were able to call up Steve easily through that process and say, how do we do this? I'm feeling isolated, because no matter how much training you get, at the end of the day, on Monday, you go back to your city or your county and stuff's the same, unless, you know, there's a process of change underway that either you're stimulating or that people are supportive of. And so having that peer network seems very important. The California Endowment, because of their ongoing commitment to healthy eating and active communities and now building healthy communities, has established a health exchange academy. And that's an ongoing resource for training that's available to folks like you, other grantees of their work. And two of my favorite trainings, I think, that are very valuable to local officials, one of them is on media advocacy. When the media speaks to you and asks you a question and you need to speak on behalf of your jurisdiction, how can you